You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Sunday afternoon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined for once by Christopher Carter for the Steelers postgame show. Usually Paul Zeiss is in this seat. Paul's got some stuff going on this week, so Chris is stopping by, the normal host of the North Shore Drive. You can hear that Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and during Steelers season, we have a special Saturday edition. Chris, how are you after a 13-10 Steelers loss? Very frustrating, especially the way it ended. I think it was frustrating all the way through, but the Steelers still had a chance to win the game after the 2-minute warning. That's supposed to be when they get things done. They did not today.
I tweeted before the game that it was going to be 5-5 at overtime, and then I was looking at 10-10 like, oh boy, maybe I just needed to double my numbers and I would have been right there for a second. But in all seriousness, you know, for me, it's like, it's all football. Like I love what I do. So like me, I don't ever have a bad time. Like even when I'm watching a terrible game, and that was a very sloppily played game on both sides, lots of terrible officiating that I thought was made the game also very cloudy. But I think the biggest takeaway that you have to have from this game, Adam, is Kenny Pickett and his lack of production in this game. And I know that's what we're about to talk about, but 15 of 28 for 106 yards. And we'll have the all 22 in a day or two here to look at again what they are. But like, just from the broadcast angles, it looked like the Browns were letting some wide open dudes run across the field. And again, down the middle of the field, I don't think that the Steelers have as much of a play calling problem as much of a Kenny Pickett needs to make the plays that are right in front of him problem.
Chris, I think you set it up well. I want to dig into that a lot more. Before we do, just want to thank our primary sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And our live stream, it is Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Chris, you mentioned that Kenny Pickett was in the spotlight today. There's the way the Steelers have played the last couple of weeks, the way they've gotten the running game going, I think some of the criticism of Matt Canada has died down a little bit, and some of the heat has landed on Kenny Pickett for the way the passing game has not gotten on track. I'm going to ask you about Canada here in a second, but just talking about Pickett here at the top, what did you see from him today? What was working, what was not working? And I guess most of that's going to be in the latter category.
I mean, what was working was the run game. I mean, anytime you run with your running backs get 160 yards on the Browns defense the way that they've played this year, your running game worked. And yes, I know a big chunk of that is from Jaylen Warren on a touchdown run, but guess what? That's part of the averages. You know, that's part of what actually happens there. I think the run game worked. I think Broderick Jones did a good job. I think Isaac Seumalo had a really bad game. Some of the play, and him and Dan Moore as a collective on the left side did not look good in this game. And you could point to a few things here and there on the offense, but there are some times where I think the play calling it does deserve to be called in question. But man, like when you have a simple 5-yard out and you have protection and he's open and your quarterback misses him and it happens multiple times in a game, it's hard to put that on anything else other than a quarterback. And I know everyone, listen, there is that dichotomy of Steelers fans that some hate Kenny Pickett, some are neutral about Kenny Pickett, some love Kenny Pickett. And whenever I've criticized Kenny Pickett this year, there's been the side of the aisle that thinks that, hey, Chris is making some good points. There's a side of the aisle that says, Chris, you hate Kenny Pickett. I'm a guy, I cover Pitt now. I covered Pitt when he played there. Kenny was always very nice to me. He still is nice to me. He's helped me with a story that I've written for Pitt this year digging up on, and I have sourced him in stories. I don't have any personal problems with Kenny Pickett. But if you are objectively evaluating his quarterback play, he is not playing at the NFL level right now. And especially in this game, third down in the red zone, field goal drive, the Steelers are moving. They've crushed the Browns with the run game. You have Deontay Johnson running on a slant over the middle, completely left uncovered. It's a great call, great opportunity. He doesn't even look his way. And that right there, there's no way that, and I know people are going to say, well, maybe he was taught to look a different direction or look this way or look that way. There's no way the Steelers engineered a play where their number one wide receiver was running wide open over the middle part of the field, and that wasn't a primary read for Kenny Pickett. That is where this offense continues to have problems. We can analyze why that is, sure, but there is no doubt the biggest problem with the Steelers offense is that Kenny Pickett cannot take what is right there in front of him. And until Steelers fans accept that, we can't have a mature conversation about what's really wrong with this offense. I think there's problems with Matt Canada. I think that he should be gone at the end of the year. But the execution problems right now, that is the biggest hurdle the Steelers have to overcome.
Is it a progression thing, Chris? Is it a matter of he's feeling pressure that's not there? Because I think that is sometimes what I see is sometimes the pressure is there. And sometimes the offense, I think about that first drive where, you know, Dan Moore misses the block. You're right on the goal line. Kenny Pickett had no chance there. And I wonder what the impact of plays like that are on his psyche later in games and if he's feeling things that aren't there.
Those plays certainly happen, and when it does, I pointed it out like, hey, offensive line stunk here. There was a screen pass where Mason Cole, if he just touches this man, if he just gives him a little shove, he gets out of Kenny Pickett's way. It's an easy screen pass to Jalen Warren, and he's off to the races because he had three dudes blocking in front of him. But because Mason Cole doesn't block his guy, that execution is missed. It's a big play opportunity that the Steelers don't have in their hands. And like that moment isn't on Kenny Pickett. But when you draft a quarterback in the first round, and I'm not saying Kenny Pickett is fully developed and this is always who he's going to be, but you expect him to make these basic throws that are right there. I think as far as your question, I actually asked Kenny Pickett and Deontay Johnson this week in the Steelers locker room about simulated pressures. And what a simulated pressure is, for those who don't know, is when a defense lines up a whole lot of guys in positions that look like they're going to be blitz, but then they back off. And the idea of a simulated pressure is to speed up the quarterback's mental clock so that he's thinking, I got to get it to my hot read and not wait through this and wait for my options to come open. Because as we've seen, look, the Steelers defense played tremendous today, but no defense can cover everybody all day, every day. And that is where fake blitzes come into play to try to slow things down. The Steelers used it on Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and it worked quite a few times. They kept him in check for pretty much the entire game. And crazy enough, as bad as Kenny Pickett was, Dorian Thompson-Robinson had a worse passer rating this game. But Kenny Pickett is drafted in the first round to be able to make these plays. And I have been all on board for the conversation that Kenny Pickett in the clutch had been cash money this season. All the game-winning drives, the fourth quarter comebacks. He was in position again to do it today, and he just didn't do it. And again, it wasn't that the opportunities weren't there. They weren't taken. And some of it, yes, deals with pressure and feeling it a little too early, and the offensive line could be better here and there. But that's part of what I saw Kenny Pickett do well at Pitt. Was there were games, the Clemson game, I think back to his last year at Pitt, where he's getting hit, he's taking physical contact, but he's not letting that affect him in the pocket. That's where I think that Kenny Pickett has to be better. Now, again, if we want to talk about Matt Canada, I don't think it's the play calls that are about the problem with Matt Canada. I don't think it's getting guys open or getting plays to the middle of the field, because you know what? Those plays are there. Again, Deontay Johnson over the middle. George Pickens was over the middle. There were plenty of opportunities for that. And I've pointed this out all season long in the All-22 review, and I'm sure we'll do it again early this week when we get the All-22 reviews. But the bottom line for Kenny Pickett in those situations, you have to communicate there. Now, if the problem is Matt Canada teaching him to see that, that can be a legitimate complaint. And I've said this for a while now. I think Matt Canada's biggest weakness is not play calling. It's teaching your players to understand what you need to execute in this critical moment to make these basic plays happen. That is, I think, the biggest disconnect that is happening right now in the Steelers offense.
Coordinating. I mean, that's what the title is, right? It is coordinating an offense. Yes. And getting 11 guys to do the same thing at the same time to have success. And I think that's a criticism I've had going back to last season where they would kind of get in these RPOs, and there always seemed to be one of those illegal man downfield penalties because not everyone was on the same page. The play was developing before where the blockers were ahead of where the play was developing and things like that. And to me, that's always been a coordination issue. But I want to pull specifically at the thread, Chris, of you don't think it's a matter of making things easier for Kenny Pickett and that Matt Canada is doing a poor job of that, because I think that's a core criticism of him right now is, yes, you've done a great job fixing up this running game, but the Steelers have not been able to take advantage in the passing game of what they've been doing with the running game. And is that a coordinator problem? So I want to just give you a chance to talk about that a little bit more.
If Matt Canada needs to make this offense any simpler, we're going to have a problem. I don't know how much simpler you can make. As much as people talk about how simple the Steelers offense is, you know why it's simple? Because they're not executing the basic things that are there. And again, it comes back down to this. You can tell a guy a million years blue in the face. If he can't hit the 5-yard slant that's right in front of him with nobody covering him, there's not much else you can do at that point, because other than just keep running the football and hoping that you hit home runs, because that's right now, that's what happened with the Steelers run game with today was, you know, again, that's a good Browns defense that you're playing, and you ran for over 160 yards on them. And if you get 160 plus yards on the ground and only 10 points on offense, there's no other place to look than the passing game, right? And, you know, again, we got to see the whole 22 all field situation, but time and time again, I have told people this year in games, they don't want to believe me, that I'm like, hey, guys, we're open on this play. In games that I've attended, I've been in the press box for, against the Niners, the opening week of the season, they got destroyed. I was saying like, hey, Pickens is open over here. Johnson's open over there. Freiermuth's open over here. It was happening, and Kenny Pickett wasn't seeing it. People didn't want to believe it because they want to believe in Kenny Pickett, and I get that. Kenny Pickett's a very likable guy. He's made a lot of big plays in his career. He's been huge in this town. He brought this town its first ever ACC football championship. But if you're being objective, these are mistakes that cannot be put anywhere else. And if you want to say that coaching, as far as teaching-wise, is getting there, I'd even agree with you, because I think that at this point, they should be able to get him to see some of these things. But there's some times where you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And that's where if I'm a Steelers fan, I'd be very afraid that is where Kenny Pickett is right now.
Yeah, I'd be very afraid, like you mentioned, that you know, if Canada is not doing that teaching element, that you know, these bad habits have another half a season to stick, right? And even if the Steelers do bring another offensive coordinator next season, how long is it going to take to undo some of what we're seeing right now? I don't know the answer to that. Chris, I want to switch gears here briefly, finish up a couple more topics on offense. The running game today looked great. Jaylen Warren was dominant. Was today became Jaylen Warren's backfield, or I guess more accurately, should this have been the day that this became Jaylen Warren's backfield?
I mean, I think that the carries have kind of shown the Steelers are very much splitting it between these two guys. And I think that that's what the Steelers are doing that's getting it right. Jaylen Warren's a fantastic running back. I'd said this last year when I was at Steelers training camp. I got a one-on-one with Eddie Faulkner, the running back coach. They said right then and there, like, Chris, he was our sixth running back on the draft board that year, like compared across all the running backs that came out when Jaylen Warren went undrafted. He said, as soon as we saw he was undrafted, we were like, we got to get that guy. And they went and got that guy. And that's what they were. And they believed in him from the jump. They wanted to see how he progressed. He's done a great job. The biggest thing I'd be worried about about Jaylen Warren is with his size, the way that he runs, you give him the ball too much, he could break. He's a guy that you can run the wheels off of. When everyone talks about how Willie Parker had the wheels run off him, that's what I think the Steelers are trying to balance right now. Because some people say, why is Najee Harris even out there? Najee Harris makes good plays. He's a good running back. Jaylen Warren is a more explosive running back, and that's what's yielding some of the bigger yardage. And I think the Steelers, they recognize that. They're getting him on the field more. Heck, I mean, you look at how he played today, and you look at how he was, you know, both were getting the ball last week in their win over the Packers. It's clear that they believe in both of these guys, and they want Jaylen Warren to have more control in the backfield. But they also don't want to run him into the ground so early in his career. I think that the Steelers have bigger plans for Jaylen Warren moving forward.
Chris, I also want to talk about the offensive line. I think inconsistent is my word for the day with them. I think there were things that, you know, there were plays you looked at, you know, the touchdown's probably right up there, but there was a lot of times today you'd say, man, I can still see what I've seen the last couple of weeks. I think there's still a lot to feel good about. There were also times where they looked like, you know, when they let the penguins out at the Pittsburgh Zoo and they're flapping around, you know, walking down the down the path to see the people. What was your overall assessment of that group today and where they're going?
Mixed bag, because there were some really great moments. I thought Broderick Jones, there were times that he was crushing people, and I was like, okay. There were times James Daniels was crushing people. Hey, there was a couple really good blocks from Mason Cole, and to me, he had been the weakest link of the Steelers' offensive line through the first half of the season. I thought he played well. But Dan Moore Jr., like, there's been some games where Dan Moore Jr. has just limited Myles Garrett just enough for the Steelers to win, and they've done that more times than not in Dan Moore Jr.'s time. this was a game that did not happen. That opening play, the opening drive where he gave up the sack. I mean, he doesn't even try to touch Myles Garrett. And it was just that's pathetic. You can't play that way. Isaac Seumalo got beat on quite a few plays, looked like he was lost at times. And part of this is the Jim Schwartz defense. They bring up a lot of guys to the line of scrimmage to force the offensive line to communicate. And if you don't communicate, it leads to a pressure coming in certain situations. And the offensive line deserves a lot of, you know, criticism for that. But they also deserve a lot of credit for creating running space against the Cleveland Browns in this game. Again, it was 160 plus yards. If I'm looking at the total here, rushing total is 172 when you factor in some of the Kenny Pickett scrambles, and everything they did in this game. When I look at that, I'm thinking like, if I got 170 plus yards on the ground against the Browns, we should be winning this game. Like if I'm looking at that objectively, just looking right now, that is the most yards the Browns have given up on the ground this season. And you got to be able to win with that. So it's a mixed bag for the offensive line. There's certainly a lot of complaints as far as some of the pass protection from certain players. But there's a lot of good to be said about the run blocking from other players. And so that's where the offensive line deserves some of the bad credit in this game. But to me, they are not nearly the biggest problem with the offense right now.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I think if Ray Fittipaldo does his report card, if I'm guessing what he's going to come back with, it might be a C+, B- type of effort for them. And I think the thing that's worth mentioning is, even if you take that big Warren run away, I think they were still finding runs with consistency. I think they were still setting themselves up, in good down and distance situations, and then just not executing on the back end for reasons that were on the line, for reasons that were on Kenny Pickett. But they were still creating those opportunities. And I think that's an important development for the offensive line. Chris, any more thoughts on offense? Any thoughts on the receivers before we move on to the defense here?
It's tough to say with some of the receivers, because there were times, and I asked this about Deontay Johnson, and this is something that is very hard to tell unless you literally sit in the film room with these guys. But part of what happens in the passing game when you're dealing with the blitz is not just the quarterback seeing it, it's also the receiver seeing it and running the right routes to counter with that. And it is always very tough to say, hey, is that the route that this guy should run on this given play? Or is this the route that guy should run on that given play? That's always tough. So those are things that you need to kind of take a step back, look at the all 22, and then make some assessments. It's like, okay, now that we see the whole field and how the entire play was structured, what should have happened here? What was the goal here? And if that's part of what happens there, I think that, if we look at that and we see that there were some option routes that should have been taken that normally are in the Steelers offense, we could certainly point to the receivers for poor play there. But it's tough for me to criticize a group that got very few chances to make plays. There were a couple plays that Deontay Johnson like could have hauled in an amazing catch, but there were very few plays that were just, hey, hit me in as I'm running and let me take off there. Those didn't happen too often. And if I'm the Steelers again, that's where I'm looking at my emphasis. I don't have many critiques for the receivers. I'll say this: I think George Pickens, he's still a really good blocker. In a game where if George Pickens has been accused of being a diva and all these other things. And in a game where he was barely getting targeted, he was getting open. There were opportunities that weren't being given him. He was still out there blocking hard, being physical, fighting for every yard. And that to me deserves kudos from him, at least from the mentality standpoint, to push against the narrative that he doesn't care about the team and he's all about himself. Because I know that was pushed out there because of his Instagram comments or whatever. So that's my main thoughts on the receivers. I need to see more tape on them to give a full evaluation of how they actually play.
And that's why we have you coming back all week on the North Shore Drive, Chris. So yeah. Giving your thoughts after you've watched the tape, all of that stuff. We're going to get into the defense here in a second. Just want to thank a couple more of our sponsors. Goldberg, Persky & White. If you were diagnosed with mesothelioma or lung cancer, call your local attorneys at Goldberg, Persky & White. For over 40 years, their firm has represented thousands of lung cancer and mesothelioma victims. Call 1-800-COMPLEX or visit gpwlaw.com for a free consultation. Also want to thank Propel Schools. Propel's 13 public charter schools in Allegheny County build a solid academic foundation for lifelong learning and offer more personalized instruction at every level during your child's kindergarten through 12th grade education journey. Give your children the quality education they deserve. Learn more and apply to Propel Schools by visiting propelschools.org. Chris, I think there was definitely some weathering the storm in the first half with this defense.
Sure.
Definitely felt like the Browns, especially after that first drive, it kind of put them on their put them on their heels a little bit, and then they really locked down the second half, and it really felt like, you know, Cleveland wasn't going to score again until that final drive. What did you see from this unit overall today, and were you encouraged by how they responded to getting punched in the mouth a little bit early?
Very encouraged. And here's the other thing about being punched in the mouth a little bit early. They gave up a touchdown on a 50-yard drive. Like, it wasn't even – it was, and actually 44 yards technically, because six of those yards were from a penalty that I thought was in the first place. But, I mean, you look at that, because it was a play where I think it was Joey Porter. I forget if that was the play where Joey Porter Jr. got called for holding after Amari Cooper pushed off on him. But either way, you know, I look at that. That's the one drive where I was like, man, the Steelers defense really, you know, messed up there. But even on that drive, Adam, I don't care what Gene Steratore or Charles Davis or whoever the heck was on the call says. There's not one angle anyone has showed where a ball has broken a plane on the touchdown that they gave the Browns, because it was not a touchdown. I still haven't seen it. The only angle that you can even see the ball shows it is short of the line to gain. Larry Ogunjobi pulls him backwards. The ball comes with him backwards. It should have been fourth and inches. And if the Browns get it there, they get it there. That's fine. But there's not an angle that they've shown. And it'd be one thing if it was called a touchdown live and then just upheld because they didn't see any angles to overturn it. But to overturn the call there, I thought that was abysmal. I thought there were a lot of things that went against the Steelers in this game. Defensively, though, other than, again, that one drive, the only touchdown they allowed that the ball never broke the plane, they defended the field extremely well. You're talking about a team that kept being put, especially in the second half, they kept being put back out on the field. The Steelers, to start the second half, they get the ball right after the touchdown. They force a punt. The Steelers offense, three and out. Guess what happens after that? The Steelers force another punt. The Steelers get, I think, 7 yards of offense on the next drive, and give the ball to the Browns at the Steelers 48. The Steelers defense has every right at this point to be gassed, toast, done against a really strong offensive line. They could get bullied. What happens? The Steelers get an interception. Then after the interception, another three and out from the Steelers offense. 2 yards of offense. The defense goes right back out there. And not only that, but they're giving a short field defense. They're, again, the Browns started in Steelers territory. Back-to-back drives in Steelers territory, 0 points allowed by the Steelers defense. And I've been saying this all season long. I think the Steelers defense is the best second half adjustment group in the NFL as far as defensive wise. So many games we come out, an offense comes out, makes a couple plays early. The Steelers talks about it, figure it out. Second half, they're right back on it, and they're keeping the team in the game. And this defense deserves a ton of credit for keeping them in the game. And mind you, in a game where they had practice squad guys playing linebacker and safety at key points there, Trenton Thompson deserves a ton of credit for being in position consistently throughout the game. He had some big hits at some big moments. Michael Walker, I didn't see him as much, but I don't think he was nearly the problem that he could have been at linebacker. And Landon Roberts played out of his mind. I think that's one of the things that's really sad about this game, is that guy deserved a game ball and would have gotten it if the offense had just done their jobs. TJ Watt still got a sack. Joey Porter Jr. had really good coverage. Patrick Peterson had really good coverage. And again, this is a safety that's missing Minkah Fitzpatrick. At one point, they were down to their fifth safety in Miles Killebrew, and he was out there making plays. So I have no – if I was to come at the defense and say anything other than, man, just a couple plays early on, a couple plays in the last drive, could have been better here and there. If I did anything more than that, I'd be trying to force a narrative that's not there about the Steelers defense. This defense is good. They make plays when they need to. They gave the Steelers every chance to win this game.
I want to dig in a little bit more on the middle linebackers, Chris. I think they were a big story throughout the week with Quan Alexander out for the season. Previously, you lose Cole Holcomb. Yep. Those were two guys that did a lot of important work, but you mentioned the Landon Roberts today. I thought played phenomenally, was everywhere. What do you like from what you saw today against a defense that, or an offense that can run the ball well? Do you have faith that they can do this next man up thing with that middle linebacking core and stay, you know, cranking out performances like you saw today without those guys over the long term?
Yes and no. I think that the Steelers defense, when they play more teams that are like the Browns that aren't trying to throw the ball all over the place, I think that that Landon Roberts is perfect for that. He looked like such a good communicator. I really think that there were so many times where there was late communication. Hey, over here, over there, and he's talking to practice squad guys that wouldn't be have a helmet right now if it weren't for two or three guys being injured on top of this, right? But for him to go out there and he's not only keeping everyone in line, but also being in the right spots. So many times the Browns testing him in open space saying, aha, here's Jerome Ford or Kareem Hunt or David Njoku in space. Make that open tackle. And pretty much every time, and Landon Roberts did. And that was spectacular on his part. He deserves, he deserves a ton of credit for what he did this game. I'll also say Keanu Benton in the middle part of the line really, really helped the Steelers out on a lot of occasions. This was a game where the Browns tried to attack the Steelers linebackers and they didn't let them. And I have to go back. I have to admit, I didn't see much of Michael Walker, the practice squad guy who started this game, number 38. I didn't see enough of Michael Walker to be able to evaluate his play. It's another guy I'll have to watch closer on film. But just the fact that he was not at the source of being gashed in this game or giving up big screen passes is a really good sign from the young guys. So that to me, the linebackers, they did fine here against some bigger passing offenses. They'll probably find a way to exploit that a little bit more. But you know what? If the Steelers can get back Minkah Fitzpatrick in a week or two, that might also make that job a lot easier over the middle.
A lot of people in the comments screaming about Presley Harvin and the punting. He had that 120-yard punt today. He's had a few others that I don't think you quite put in the total shank category, but that were still not very good. Chris, what do they do with this situation? It feels like every time we get to the point of Presley Harvin should be kicking for his job this week, he comes back from the edge and comes out with a great game. What's your read on that situation? Is he ever going to find the consistency that the Steelers need in a game like this today?
I mean, it's been 3 years now. And listen, the first year I was one of the people that was all on board. Hey, he lost his dad. He lost his grandmother. That was a rough time. I get it. But you got to be consistent at some point, man. There's no excuses for it. All in all today, he averaged less than 40 yards per punt. And that's not good enough. And even in the punts where if it was a leg strength thing, which it's not, because I've seen him punt the snot out of the ball, it'd be one thing. But even in plays where the Steelers had decent field position and all he had to do was pin the Browns inside the 10, he was pinning him inside the 20. He couldn't get it inside the 10. And that to me also played a role in the Steelers' loss. If you look at some of these possessions the Steelers had in the fourth quarter, the two punts that they had, they punted from their own. Sorry, I'm just trying to. They punted from Cleveland's 43. The Browns got the ball at their own 27. That's inexcusable. You can't do that. Then they punted from their own 30. And the Browns, that was like the one punt that he had. I think he got it to 14. He got it to the Browns 14 on that drive. No, excuse me. That was the 35. Never mind. I'm mixing up. It's tough to break this down with the sheet right in front of me here that kind of doesn't correlate the punch situation too well. But twice the Steelers had really good field position late in the game, and just he couldn't flip the field. Whereas the Browns punter, I thought did a really good job flipping the field. Borazquez, I'm sorry if I butchered his name. He averaged almost 48 yards per punt. He had a 65 yarder. In this game, Presley Harvin has to be better. And like you said, there's, you know what, Mike Thomas probably going to call him out in the press conference. He's going to come out next week and boom, like a 70-yarder. And I got to tell you, Adam, like I covered this guy in the ACC. I watched him in 2020 punting the ball against Pitt when Pitt's defense was just all over Georgia Tech, pinning them back inside their 10 almost every drive. And then Presley Harvin would come out and just boom and would just punt the ball. And the Pitt would start inside its own 20 after Georgia Tech being in its own end zone. And I was just so blown away. I'm like, man, if the Steelers can get that guy, they'll be good. And they got that guy, but he hasn't been that guy in the NFL. And that, I think that experiment, it needs to be done with, bring another punter in, either right now or after the season, and see if you could find someone that is consistent, because right now you're just not getting it.
Chris, quickly, you and I go back and forth after every one of these Browns games. Usually the analytics say Myles Garrett had a better game than TJ Watt, does something crazy. What did you think of that TJ Watt-Myles Garrett battle today? and how that figured in the outcome of the game.
Let's see. Myles Garrett had 2 sacks. TJ had 1. So that goes in Myles Garrett's favor. TJ Watt had 1 sack, had more quarterback hits, just as many tackles for losses, more tackles. I mean, one thing you could tell Myles Garrett impacted the game, but you could also tell that TJ Watt did. I'd say Myles Garrett had a slightly better game than TJ Watt, but it's kind of one of those things where if this is PFF, you're probably going to see Myles Garrett with like 1,000% grade and TJ with a 20. And like, it's going to be one of those things where TJ Watt can literally score a touchdown, sack a quarterback more times, do more in a game and get a lesser grade than Myles Garrett. So in this game where Myles Garrett actually, I did think, performed a little bit better than TJ Watt, he'll probably be leaps and bounds ahead of him. So Myles Garrett certainly performed a little bit better, but that wasn't the determining factor in this game, because Myles Garrett, he wasn't, he made a couple plays early on, but late in the game, the Steelers, they were running the ball, and there were a couple times they ran it at Myles Garrett and he wasn't doing much to stop him. And there were times where the Steelers were moving the ball in the second half and it wasn't him stopping him. It was Kenny Pickett missing wide open guys. So, I think that TJ Watt, you could see in the second half, he made a big sack that stopped the drive. He was able to help the Steelers defense hold it together. Even while Kenny Pickett was missing open guys. I think Myles Garrett outplayed TJ Watt by a little bit, but not by much.
Chris, anything more you wanted to say about the officiating? I know you had some problems. There was that roughing the passer call. I think I saw a few people get upset about. There was the touchdown where I believe the explanation, going back to what you said, I never saw an angle where it was in the end zone, but it seemed like they made the argument that they sometimes do in hockey of if the ball's in the glove and the entire glove is in the goal, then it's a goal. I've rarely seen that application in the NFL. It's usually you need definitive proof that the ball crossed the plane.
Yeah, that's just there. And it's just so many inconsistencies. And look, if somebody wants to say, I saw some Browns fans saying, oh, they got screwed out of a safety. Okay, well, let's flip those. The Steelers give up a safety. The Browns don't score a touchdown. Then that's 7 points one way, 2 points the other. The Steelers end up winning the game. So I feel like, if anything, the Browns got over on that. But there were just several other points of the game. The roughing the passer call. Amari Cooper just continuing to push off Joey Porter all game on Joey Porter Jr. I said it. Joey's got to watch it because at some point he's going to get called for fighting back there. And sure enough, he was. And I was like, okay. TJ Watt getting held in key situations. Even Nate Herbig is getting held in key situations. There was a screen pass where Nate Herbig, perfect position, all over it, ready to make the play. I think it's actually Nick Herbig. I apologize. The brother thing always messes me up. But like, he's in position. He's all over the screen. All of a sudden, the linebacker literally grabs behind his shoulder pads and just holds on to him. And Herbig just throws his hit. Like, what am I supposed to do? No flags came. I thought that, it doesn't excuse Kenny Pickett or his mistakes, but officiating was just terrible. Dale Lally, who works for the Steelers, pointed out it's the Hockey League crew. It's going to be a rough one. And he was absolutely right. There was another play where George Pickens catches the ball, tiptoes down the sideline, perfectly leans over. They even have the pylon on the sidelines now for if he puts the ball over it and he hits the pylon, you can see he gets the first down. He hit the pylon with his arm while the ball was ahead of it, and he still marked him 2 yards back. And I was like, I don't know what else you need to see there. So it continues to be the story. NFL officiating, I think, is terrible. Everyone complains about NHL officiating, MLB officiating, umpires, and all this other stuff. But the NFL is making too much money of a league to not have full-time officials everywhere across the board, no exceptions, and to not be putting more pressure on them and holding them more accountable for situations. And again, this excuses nothing of what Kenny Pickett didn't do, what the offense didn't do, and the Steelers not winning a game against a very beatable opponent. I don't think the Browns are – I think the Browns' defense is good. I don't think the Browns are that good of a team for the Steelers to have lost this game without terrible quarterback play. Also, how about this, Adam? I missed this, and I'm just seeing this on Twitter popping up on the Kenny Pickett quarterback sneak. Afterwards, Kenny Pickett, had his helmet ripped off. Myles Garrett went to pick up the helmet and immediately – Broderick Jones like snatched it out of his hand and was just like, don't do that. And Myles Garrett's like, I'm not doing nothing. I'm sad I missed that live, because that is actually really funny to see after the game.
Yeah, we don't need any more helmets in Myles Garrett's hand in Cleveland with the Steelers in town. Chris, I talked about this with Paul last week before all the quarterback injuries kind of went down the way they did this week. But I think the thought was, if the Steelers go 1-1 in these two divisional road games, that they're still on pace for what they need to be doing. Do you still feel that way? Do you look at next week as a must-win game? Where's your view in the big picture of them right now?
You know, it's tough to say a must-win game. They'd be 6-5 if they lost it. Hold on, let me pull up their schedule right here just to get things back and get things right in front of me again. But let's say they're 6-4 now. And I believe if the playoffs were to start today, looking at this, they would still be the 7th seed right now. So if they lost that week, next week, they'd be in trouble. But they would have games against, and back home, games against the Patriots, who've been terrible, the Cardinals, who've been terrible, on the road against the Colts. They'd get a rematch with the Bengals in Pittsburgh. Seattle hasn't been good, and we know that them and the Ravens, just like this game, can be a coin flip. I don't think the Bengals game is a must win, but if it's not one, it will make all the next four games must wins. Because again, that's the other thing: the Steelers have 6 wins right now. This isn't last year where they were 2-6, in the halfway point of the season. I think they were 3-6 at this point of the season. All they have to do is win 4 more games. And if they beat and you look at the Cardinals, the Patriots, the Colts, you look at those 3 games, if they win those 3, and neither of those teams have the defense that the Browns bring to the table, all you have to do is win 1 more game out of both the Bengals games, the Seahawks game, or the Ravens game, and you get 10 wins. And I think 10 wins right now in the AFC gets you into the playoffs with how everyone else is faring right now. So I don't think next week is a must win, but if it's not won next week, it makes every other game that much more important. But let's say they win next week. All of a sudden, they're 7-4. They get those back-to-back home games against the Cardinals and the Patriots. They get the Colts again. You have a chance to be 10-4 going into your final 3 games of the season, where if you win one more game, you're not just a wild card team. You might be one of the higher wild card teams. So I don't think they're in the dire straits yet. This is a disappointing loss that if they pulled out, they'd have been in the driver's seat for their division, because they'd be right behind the Ravens and literally they would control their own destiny. Now they need some help, but they don't need too much help. They still have most of the season in front of them.
Chris, you're going to be back tomorrow on the North Shore Drive Monday morning. I think it'll be either Ray or Brian joining you, right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's Ray. We usually have Brian at the end of the week. But yeah, Ray and I should be on for the Monday episode. That'll give us more time to kind of evaluate things. Like right now, I'm kind of just breaking things down myself and looking over stuff. So hopefully we'll have more to talk about then. And certainly we'll also see what's going on inside the Steelers locker room, because I do think one of the undiscussed discussions that will happen in the coming weeks is, does this team still believe in Kenny Pickett? Are people behind Kenny Pickett? Because it's one thing when it's a bad game or two, but as much as fans are talking about, you still haven't seen the breakout game from Kenny Pickett. I guarantee you that there's players on the Steelers roster that are thinking like, man, they're holding their tongue because they're trying to be respectful of the young quarterback, trying to figure it out. And that could be an issue. But now we're talking about in the last 5 weeks, he has 1 touchdown pass. That's not good by any measure. And granted, one of those weeks he was hurt for the second half, sure, but that cannot. That cannot continue if the Steelers offense hopes to take steps forward, and if the Steelers playmakers, keep their mouths shut. I think that's going to be it's going to make it that much harder for them to do so.
Chris, thank you for all the insight tonight. You're going to be on Channel 11 tonight too, on The Final Word, right?
Yes, sir. Final Word. I'm hosting tonight. It's going to be a fun episode. We'll have Pitt and Penn Staters, Johnny Patrician making his debut appearance, Justin King as well, Doug Whaley, also former Steelers front office man and Bills GM. It's going to be a fun episode. Steelers fans, I know you're probably sitting there, but hey, you at least got some local guys breaking it down, so you don't got to deal with the national opinions breaking down. So join us in The Final Word. That should be around 11:35 p.m. on Channel 11 WPXI.
I will be on the couch for that, Chris. If you enjoyed this video, please subscribe. Help us out in the YouTube algorithm by popping a like on the video. And we'll talk to you again throughout the week. Thanks, as always, for stopping by. Great audience today.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com. We're still streaming.
It's hanging here on, hanging on here. I hit the button. Hi, everyone, if you're still there.